You may proceed.
May it please the court, good morning, Your Honors. I'm David Connick, representing the appellant, Marion Bragg, in this case. This is a case that involves a minimum of 15 violations of the Freedom of Information Act stemming from five meetings of the Board of Supervisors of Rappahannock County. And as the code provides, each one of those violations constitutes an actionable matter. Now, as to 10 of the 15 violations, those are supported by an affidavit in accordance with Section 2.23713A of the code. Those are the violations that deal with the motions to go into the executive session, which are in the pleading. They're copied in length. And don't fall within, number one, they don't fall within the exemptions. And number two, they combine a series of code sections and a series of topics, but they don't specify which code sections apply to which of the topics. So those are five violations there. Some of those involve also matters that are in the motions that aren't exempt topics.
We've read your complaint and your petition. And the Frazier affidavit deals with paragraphs 9 through 25 of the petition.
Correct.
And if indeed the petition is true, there is a pattern and a practice of violating the open meetings provisions of FOIA. Have those paragraphs been, and we have no transcript, were those paragraphs ever denied by the county up to this point?
Well, no, Your Honor. They've denied that it's a violation, but they haven't denied what's in them. No,
and they haven't denied.
There's only a demur and a motion for summary judgment. So there's no answer has ever been filed in the case,
and no denial of the facts that are stated in the Frazier acknowledgement. Simply a reliance upon the fact that there's no jurat.
Correct. Well, we never intended to have it as jurat because we were following what the Freedom of Information Council recommended, which is an acknowledgement. That's where that word came from their advisory opinion that was issued several months before this case was filed. And that's the basis of it. It doesn't say it has to be a sworn thing like in the Marsh case. The mayor issued a press release. It wasn't even signed, much less notarized. In White Dog, there was a memorandum of the county attorney that came out and stated what was discussed in the executive session. And that was the basis. Well, that wasn't a statement by anybody, but the primary issue in the case is if a citizen is excluded wrongfully from what should be an open meeting, how can they possibly satisfy the standard that the trial court judge enunciated here? Because you can't, without running afoul of Ford versus Benitez, you have to have some knowledge.
And I presume that the information and belief that was referenced in the Bragg affidavit is, in fact, the allegations in the Frazier acknowledgement.
Exactly right, and that's in paragraph 35, which recites what's in the Frazier acknowledgement. And without that, I'll be very frank, I told the client, if we don't have something, we have no basis. How do we file this? How do you make an affidavit to the court and say, this is what happened in a closed meeting that you were improperly excluded from? You can't, except other than on information and belief. You have no other way to do it.
Like
unless you have
a Heller's catch 22.
Exactly. Unless you have a great mayor like Mayor Marsh who comes out the next day and blurts out what they said.
May I ask you this? Is this oversimplifying your case to say that if the Bragg affidavit was proper under 8.01.280 in the Paris case, the case goes back, the Bragg affidavit, as has just been suggested, simply incorporates by reference the Frazier information, and so if that Bragg affidavit should have been considered for good cause, it just goes back for a good cause examination. Do we need to address anything else in the case from your perspective, if that were the rationale?
I think you're exactly correct, Your Honor, and I think the Paris case and also the Carpenter versus Gray case that both say, and they both have formulations, they're a little bit different, but they're virtually identical to what's in Bragg's affidavit, number one, and number two, they say that substantial compliance is sufficient, and certainly in a case like this, I want to go back to one of the things we skipped over, the second five of the violations, and that is that the board voted to go into executive session five different times, not in public. They, and it's on tape, there's videos, and those videos are footnoted, and I say they're incorporated by reference in the pleadings. Your Honors can look at the videos, they're on YouTube, and you'll see that the chairman of the board said, well, we're now going to have our closed session, we're going to take a recess before we have our closed session, and everybody was invited to leave. And they did leave, and the video ends.
I guess what I'm trying to suggest, counsel, is would it be necessary or even is it appropriate for us to get into the merits of the allegations at all in this proceeding? Because I'm not reading the trial judge to have done that. I'm reading the trial judge to have kicked out two affidavits and said that as a matter of law, since they're not performing, there's no good cause. But if Bragg comes back down and Frazier is implicit in Bragg, wouldn't we want the trial court to make that first judgment call rather than us make it on appeal?
Absolutely. The only reason I raise it, Your Honor, is because those 10 violations, the bad motions and the voting not in public, those 10 violations are not stated on information and belief. They're in the first part of the Bragg affidavit. The only violations, and I'm calling them five, but if you say, well, they talked about three different topics that weren't exempt, maybe that's three violations. But let's just say there's five and group them like that as to what happened in the closed session. That's the only part that's on information and belief anywhere in the pleading. The rest is not on information and belief. That's covered by the first part of Bragg.
But even that doesn't matter under 280.
I don't think you get into any of those issues. If you send it back, then there has to be a hearing, and that's all Ms. Bragg wants is her day in court to put on the evidence and hear what happened and have the court make the findings and decide whether or not they were knowing and willful violations, and if so, whether or not it's an appropriate case for injunctive relief or mandamus or whether the civil penalty should be imposed. So I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, Jonathan Leinhardt of Walker Jones on behalf of the appellees, and I'm joined at counsel with my law partner, Michael Brown. The trial court in this case recognized that a proceeding, an enforcement proceeding under Virginia's FOIA statute under 2.2.3713A requires an affidavit showing good cause. That's critical here. And if I may, I'd like to go directly to the question that was posed earlier by Justice Kelsey with respect to the Paris decision, because I think that is critical to understanding the distinction between what happened in Paris versus what the trial court did here. In Paris, if I may, this court reaffirmed what is now 8.01.280, the general catch-all affidavit statute, as I call it, that says an affidavit is good if an affiant swears that he believes it to be true. In this particular case, however, there is something critical to the FOIA statute that requires another analysis by the trial court, and that's exactly what the trial court did. And that is, it says an affidavit showing good cause. I think if there were a period after that affidavit in the statute, we wouldn't be here. But the General Assembly put in there showing good cause, and that has to mean something. And the question is, what does that mean?
Sometimes we take the simplest matters and we make them overly complicated, but probably because of the lawyers.
I would agree with that, Justice Mims.
Good. I'm glad we have common basis. We have a citizen who filed an affidavit. The affidavit said, I had the right to be in a meeting where these matters were discussed. And that right was taken away from me. And I wasn't in the meeting. And therefore, I cannot say precisely what was discussed. And in fact, that's why I'm here. But I have a detailed acknowledgement by a member of the Board of Supervisors who was in there saying that paragraphs 9 through 25 of my petition are accurate. And so, therefore, since I have that document, which I'm marrying up with my affidavit, I'm going to say on information and belief that there's a violation. It's that simple.
But, Justice Mims, that begs the question, does such a formula, you step forward with a petition, with this affidavit, bootstrapping in this acknowledgement from a member of the Board of Supervisors, does that show good cause?
Absolutely, but the court never reached that because it looked at one document completely separate from the other when, in fact, they have to be read together.
Well, in fact, if I may, I think what the court did is the court did an analysis of both documents that were incorporated into or attached with the amended petition, the Bragg affidavit and the Frazier acknowledgement. And when you look at the Frazier acknowledgement, and I think this is also critical, and the court addressed this as well. First of all, Frazier's acknowledgement was based upon a draft complaint that he says he'd received. That's in the acknowledgement itself. It is part of the pleadings in this case.
Is it your position that there is a substantive difference between paragraphs 9 through 25 of what he read and paragraphs 9 through 25 of what I'm reading?
I don't think as a matter of policy there is, but I do think that's important when you're looking at someone who's trying to bootstrap into an affidavit, a sworn statement. I think the basis of that sworn statement it can be important. The other thing I think that's very critical is this. He walked out of those meetings and certified as a member of the Board of Supervisors that those meetings were in compliance with FOIA.
Well, that's something you take up at evidentiary hearing, right? And good cause just allows you to get to one.
Except that in this case, Justice Kelsey, the court had in front of it the Frazier acknowledgement, which set that out. That is there as part of the pleadings. It is attached to the amended petition or incorporated in the amended petition.
So if he had a long night of the soul where he said, you know, I certified that and it's not true, and therefore I am going to go in public with a detailed substantive document saying why it's not true, he's not permitted to do that?
Well, he's certainly permitted to do it, Justice Mims, but I think that it is perfectly acceptable at that point for a trial court looking at this standard, is there an affidavit showing good cause, to realize that in that very same acknowledgement, he admits that he'd already voted to certify, and that creates an estoppel question, a legitimate estoppel question, that the trial court can consider at that point.
What's the estoppel question?
And
who is being estopped?
Well, Frazier is, because on the one hand, Justice Goodwin, he already certified and acknowledged as much that he certified that the closed meetings were in compliance with FOIA. He certified that that is what you do under FOIA. He then says in paragraph 7 of the Frazier acknowledgement, I now believe that was an error.
A lot of elected officials have some rudimentary understanding of FOIA, but maybe not all the particulars and the case law and the opinions, the advisory council and all that. So why can't someone just make a mistake and say, well, you know what, I thought I was on solid ground, but by golly, now I've read this advisory council opinion, this official opinion from the Attorney General's office, whatever. Well, by golly, maybe I have a problem. Well, why is the initial certification forever conclusive and can never be revisited? I'm really struggling with that point.
Who's relied upon that representation so that he's stopped from changing his feelings about it?
Well, the reliance would be the parties to the case in this. I mean, he is somebody who is now saying, well, that was wrong, but back then I said it was right. And I concede there's no case on point that I've seen from this court that says exactly what you're suggesting, Justice
Counsel,
McCullough.
Counsel, would you argue estoppel in brief?
We raised it because the trial court did, in fact, with respect to the breach, I believe.
Where in your brief is estoppel? And I'm not saying it's not there. I'm just saying I don't remember seeing it.
If I might have just a moment, Justice Mims. Yes, it's on, I believe it is on page 9. It was procedurally and legally deficient to support Bragg's amended petition at the record. And we cite to the record where he actually says that he was estopped.
Assume for the sake of argument that estoppel somehow remotely even affects this case. The person who's being estopped is not the gentleman who did the acknowledgement, it's Mrs. Bragg.
Well, but she's the one, if I may, Chief Justice Lemons, that is incorporating on information his acknowledgement.
But that's a matter of fact that could be tested. Estoppel is a different concept altogether. You're telling Ms. Bragg, I'm sorry, we're not going to accept your affidavit and verification because we actually don't believe a factual allegation contained in somebody else's acknowledgement. How is that, even if estoppel is involved as a concept, how would it work against Ms. Bragg?
Because it goes to the idea of the very basis of the affidavit she's presented to the court. It's a requirement of Section A of FOIA to get out of the gate in terms of filing her pleading. She has to file an affidavit that shows good cause. She then loops back in as part of that affidavit an acknowledgement made by Frazier that's essentially unsworn, that sets forth what he sets forth.
But what you're saying is that Mr. Frazier is estopped from changing his mind, and as a result, that estops Mrs. Bragg.
Well, I think it calls into question whether or not she has shown good cause in the affidavit that she has filed with her petition.
But that's the reason we have evidentiary hearings. We don't resolve the merits at the pleading stage. We just ask ourselves, is there a prima facie showing of good cause? And if there is, let's bring him in here and somebody cross-examine him and we'll figure out what the truth is.
But in this case, the trial court found that obviously there wasn't. And I think the trial court should be affirmed in that because when you look at her affidavit, it isn't, if I may focus on another issue,
May I interrupt you there for a second?
Yes.
But let me just ask you, what is your position? Is the certification the board member made true or false? And is his affidavit factually true or false, which repudiates that? Which one is true? Which one is false?
My client's position is that his is false. But at this stage, what I would say is
so the,
because
the
you can't tell.
The repudiation is false, but the certification is true.
Yes, Justice.
And we don't need an evidentiary hearing to find out if you're right?
We don't at this stage because she hasn't supplied an affidavit that shows good cause with the petition.
Well, what is good cause? I mean, I began my career on the criminal law side, and probable cause isn't certainty. It's not beyond reasonable doubt. It's not even preponderance. Now, maybe that's discrete to the criminal law context, but the language is similar. So why, I mean, does she have to prove that absolutely in her averments there was a problem? Or is it sufficient to say, hey, maybe there's a problem, and so we need to look into it? I'm trying to figure out where good cause lands, where we peg it on the ladder of certainty.
And I think the best way I can answer that, Justice McCullough, is to look where in other areas of the law, and this is not in my brief, I was thinking of this the other day, where do we see good cause? And what I've been able to come up with is you see it obviously on default judgments, setting aside default judgments. You see it with respect to, valuations when you're doing equitable distributions in terms of where you date it other than the trial date. You see it with respect to a petition for certain name changes.
I'll tell you where else you see it. You see it in capital murder cases where a witness has recanted. And we open up the court systems to determine whether the recantation is accurate or the initial testimony is accurate. I don't see that as being anywhere different than this, but it sure involves something far more important than this. It involves somebody's life. That's the question that overshadows all of this. This lady can't possibly know what happened in the meeting. That's why she's suing him, because she wasn't in the meeting.
Well, if I may, I'd like to address that. And I think Justice McCullough asked this of Leonard, opposition counsel earlier with respect to the Catch-22. How do you know? And actually, I can come up with several ways that you could do this. First of all, you can observe as a citizen whether or not the actions that the board says they're going to undertake, they in fact do undertake. You can observe that. But there's something else I think can do.
But it's not only actions, it's what is discussed. It's the whole purpose of the open meeting requirement is so that citizens can understand why and how a decision is made. Not only that a decision is made. They have the right to hear the arguments.
And Justice Mims, so that gets to my second point, which is it's not just the observations. You can also be, she could set forth an affidavit that says that Frazier or anyone else who was in the meeting told her this is exactly what happened. This is what happened. And she could swear to that. But she didn't do that in this case. Instead, she went out and she got a Frazier, this acknowledgement, which says, well, I've reviewed this draft petition, now I'm in error. And she wants to bootstrap that in through on information pleading.
She has page after page after page where she makes factual allegations, and he says, yes, they are correct. What more is required?
Well, first of all, he didn't swear that there was a problem with the jurat there that the trial court found that I think is also a substantial problem with respect to his acknowledgement. But
you know,
the other...
Do you recognize part of the frustration? This was kicked out on two technicalities. And yet, over and over and over and over again, she is alleging, and in fact, if you look at the YouTube recordings, she's alleging factually that this board didn't care about technicalities. That it said, well, we're just going to go into a closed meeting. And then it's minutes suddenly have what the statute requires, but when you listen to the recording, they didn't care about the statute. I mean, if this was in court, we would call it approbating and reprobating.
I certainly can appreciate that frustration, Justice Mims, but what I'm trying to do here today is explain why the trial court was correct in kicking it on these technicalities. And while they might be technicalities can be a big deal under the law. And the fact of the matter is, I would submit that the trial court did the right thing by finding that this affidavit did not comply with the FOIA requirement, that it showed good cause. And for that reason, the trial court should be affirmed.
Can I ask you a question? So you're saying it's the substance of the affidavit, assuming everything in the affidavit is true, that it still would not be sufficient for there to be good cause. Is that what you're saying? I thought that the court was saying that it was a procedural technicality which prevented it from even considering the affidavit.
Well, I think if she swore to everything in that petition on personal knowledge, I think she would meet her burden.
All right. So it's not so you're saying it's not the fact that the affidavit was accepted, but it didn't meet the good cause requirement. You're saying the affidavit was insufficient and it should not be considered because it's not in the proper form.
Well, there is a form problem, Justice Goodwin, with respect to particularly looping in the Frazier acknowledgement. But I think in order to consider good cause, the court had to look at the basis for the affidavit and decided that was insufficient, which is why it's not an affidavit that shows good cause and does not meet the standard of the statute.
Well, even if that's the case, her affidavit is sufficient for an obviously different reason. She says, are true and correct, except to the extent therein stated to be on information, and to such extent she believes them to be true. So what you're doing is you're carving out anything she said on information to be unworthy of consideration by the court. Is that correct?
Yes, Chief Justice.
Well, at least we understand your argument.
And I would submit that's those are the major, those are the gravamen of the complaint, as the trial court said.
And how would a citizen file an affidavit saying what happened in a closed session?
Because the citizen actually, Justice McClanahan, could be told what happened in that closed session.
Which is what Supervisor Frazier did.
Respectfully, Justice Mims, I think she did it differently. She could have said, Supervisor Frazier told me they want to discuss XYZ. In fact, they discussed ABC. She could have done that. She didn't. This was he going out and saying it with this acknowledgement, having already certified that that's not what happened.
So I want to make sure I understand the full consequence of your argument if we accept it. The full consequence of your argument if we accept it is that every time a public body certifies that we obeyed the law, the door closes, the curtain falls, and you can never again show that they didn't obey the law, regardless of the certification.
No, Justice Mims, because I think one of them could have gone to Ms. Bragg and told her what happened, and she could have filed an affidavit that set that forth.
Instead, she filed hundreds of words, and that same person said, she's telling the truth. What's the substantive difference between the two?
Because in the first case, the example I suggested, it's her affidavit. It's her swearing that this is what's going on.
Back to the technicality. My question is going to answer.
Understood.
Mr. Leonard, sometimes you get dealt a real hot one, and you did. But you did a good job handling it, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Chief Justice. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the
points. You have a rather substantial amount of time remaining if you choose to use it.
The last clause is the most important.
I want to try to put in some perspective some of the questions that you've been asking, and the first place that I would suggest the court look is in section 2.23713 subsection E, which specifically says that the findings and the certifications and so forth of the court, to answer Justice Mims' question just now, have no weight when it comes before the court. They're not entitled to any weight at all, and they are required to do it. There's nothing to support the judge's, the trial court's statement in the letter opinion about what it amounts to estoppel, which is once you certify, you can never recant. You can never, and even if you did it on the basis, there are the cases in, I think, Najod and Marsh where they acted in reliance on advice of counsel. What if it was wrong advice? What if they didn't have any advice? What if the counsel wasn't there? There's got to be an opportunity to enforce the law.
Or they just had a long night of the soul.
What?
We just heard about the possibility of a long night of
right.
the soul.
Or, if, or maybe when they read the draft complaint, the lights went on. But whatever the reason is, I want to address this issue that's come up about what has to be in the affidavit and what has to be in the petition. The statute says with reasonable specificity. It doesn't, and I would say not only is this more than reasonable specificity, but under the circumstances, as a number of you have already observed, I think, how could you get any more detail? How could you make it any more specific about a meeting that you were improperly excluded from? And if the statute is to have any meaning, this cannot be the right result. I think that the purpose of FOIA is to facilitate open government, not to frustrate it. And when you read the brief that's been submitted that has statements in it about an opportunity for prosecuting someone who files a false affidavit, I have to say that that came as a surprise to me. What I was concerned about was Ford versus Benitez and the possibility of sanctions, not the possibility of being prosecuted because you, for whatever reason, said something happened in a closed meeting that didn't really happen. I don't think that's the mindset of FOIA. FOIA is to encourage open government and to encourage, if there's been a violation, to facilitate people to get their rights. And I think FOIA goes back to one of the fundamental principles that's enshrined in the Constitution of Virginia in Article 1, Section 2, that people are the source of power and that all government officials are amenable to them. And that's why FOIA exists. It's one of the reasons that exists, to bring that lofty principle into fruition and into action and into a reality in people's lives. And if I just have to say that, and I'll close with this, that if I don't know in a situation like this how anything could have been more detailed, more spelled out, or how the affidavit could have been written in any other way, honestly, and that would have achieved the purpose of the statute, and it's a remedial statute. And finally, I want to suggest to the court that you look at the form that I believe the Supreme Court has either blessed or puts out that's on your webpage of court forms. And there is a court form for a FOIA violation. And at the bottom, all it says is, subscribed, sworn to, and acknowledged this day before me. And then there's a blank for a notary public. There's not any of the detail that we put in our affidavit, and it was put in there for a very, I think, specific purpose, because it's impossible to swear to something that you don't know of your own personal belief, and that could not ever happen in a closed meeting situation. Thank you very much, Your Honor. We ask that the court remand this case back for
trial. Next day.
Thank you.